Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Total Energy Services, Inc. fourth quarter and year-end 2018 results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Daniel Halyk. Please go ahead, Mr. Halyk.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to Total Energy Services' fourth quarter 2018 conference call. Present with me this morning is Yuliya Gorbach, Total's VP Finance and CFO. We will review with you Total's financial and operating highlights for the three months ended December 31st, 2018, and then provide an outlook for our business and open up the phone lines for questions. Yuliya, please proceed.
Thank you, Dan. During the course of this conference call, information may be provided containing forward-looking information concerning Total's projected operating results, anticipated capital expenditure trends, and projected drilling activity in the oil and gas industry. Actual events or results may differ materially from those reflected in Total's forward-looking statements due to a number of risks, uncertainties, and other factors affecting Total's business and the oil and gas service industry in general. These risks, uncertainties, and other factors are described under the heading Risk Factors and elsewhere in Total's most recently filed annual information form and other documents filed with Canadian provincial securities authorities and are available to the public at www.sedar.com. Our discussions during this conference call are qualified with reference to the notes to the financial highlights contained in the news release issued yesterday. Unless otherwise indicated, all financial information in this conference call is presented in Canadian dollars. Total Energy's financial results for the three months ended December 31st, 2018, are comparable with Q4 2017 and reflect a significant decline in drilling and completion activity in Canada, offset by continued growth in the compression and process services segment and relatively stable industry conditions in the United States and Australia. Consolidated revenue for the fourth quarter of 2018 were 219.8 million dollars compared to 180.2 million dollars in the fourth quarter of 2017. Geographically, 48% of fourth quarter revenue was generated in Canada, 26% in the United States, and 26% in Australia as compared to 45% in Canada, 35% in the United States, and 20% in Australia during the fourth quarter of 2017. By business segment, compression and process services contributed 53% of 2018 fourth quarter consolidated revenues, contract drilling services 21%, well servicing 17%, and rentals and transportation services 9%. Fourth quarter revenue for the contract drilling services segment was 47.3 million dollars, or 21,958 dollars per spud drilling operating day. Excluding Canadian subsistence revenues that essentially flow through to employees and on which no margin is earned, revenue per spud drilling day for the fourth quarter was 21,005 dollars, a 1% increase from Q4 2017. Segment EBITDA was 7 million dollars, or 15% of revenue in the fourth quarter of 2018, as compared to EBITDA of 11.5 million, or 22% of revenue in the fourth quarter of 2017. Contract drilling services segment recorded 2,152 operating days, or 21% utilization during the fourth quarter of 2018, as compared to 2,476 days, or 23% utilization in the fourth quarter of 2017. The contract drilling segment generated $1.1 million operating loss in Q4 2018, compared to $3.6 million of operating income in Q4 2017. The Q4 2018 contract drilling segment results were negatively impacted by a decline in North American drilling activity and the lower Australian dollar. Underlying the decrease in Canadian drilling activity during the fourth quarter of 2018 was an approximate 40% decline in WTI oil price, coupled with a substantial increase in the price discount for Western Canadian oil relative to WTI due to a lack of Canadian oil pipelines and other export capacity. In the United States, unpaid downtime and repair costs arising from damage to a rig during rig move operations contributed to increased year-over-year quarterly operating loss. The damaged rig has been repaired and returned to service in 2019. Utilization in Australia increased due to an additional rig commencing operations as compared to the same period in 2017. Effective day rates in Australia were lower in Q4 2018 as compared to Q4 2017 due to modestly lower pricing, a high proportion of lower margin standby hours, and the mix of equipment operating. On an annual basis, the operating loss for contract drilling services segment decreased from $8.9 million in 2017 to $0.9 million in 2018. Segment EBITDA for 2018 was $31.8 million, an 84% increase from the $17.4 million of EBITDA generated in 2017. This improvement was a result of realized operating synergies arising from the integration of Savannah following the acquisition that was effective April 5, 2017, improved discipline in declining unprofitable work, and ongoing cost management. The revenue from rentals and transportation segment for the fourth quarter of 2018 was 8% higher than Q4 2017. Segment EBITDA for the fourth quarter of 2018 was $5.6 million, or 28% of revenue, as compared to EBITDA of $2.9 million, or 16% of revenue, in the fourth quarter of 2017. The rental equipment fleet decreased by 4% with a disposal of 400 pieces in Canada during 2018. Utilization for the fourth quarter of 2018 was 27% as compared to 24% in Q4 2017. Contributing to increased segment EBITDA were increased activity in the United States and a decrease in operating loss in Canada, despite lower Canadian revenues. As a result of persistent weak industry conditions in Canada, beginning in late of Q3 2018, the RTS segment undertook measures to substantially lower its Canadian fixed cost structure. This included the closure of 5 branch locations and the disposition of 400 pieces of rental equipment and 22 heavy trucks. The utilization of rental equipment in Canada during the fourth quarter of 2018 was 1% higher as compared with the fourth quarter of 2017 on a rental fleet that decreased by 550 pieces or 5%. Revenue per utilized piece of equipment in Canada increased 2% as compared to the fourth quarter of 2017. This was primarily due to the change in the mix of equipment operating during the quarter. Unlike Canada, the RTS segment in the United States continued to grow in the fourth quarter of 2018. Compared to the fourth quarter of 2017, utilization in the United States increased 38%, and revenue per utilized piece increased by 25%. Additionally, the rental fleet increased by 150 pieces, or 30%, to 650 pieces at December 31st, 2018, compared to December 31st, 2017, with the relocation of underutilized equipment from Canada and targeted new equipment additions. On an annual basis, the operating loss for RDS segment decreased from $4.7 million in 2017 to $3 million in 2018. Segment EBITDA for 2018 was $15.4 million, a 9% increase from $14.2 million of EBITDA generated in 2017. This improvement was the result of improving business conditions in the United States and infrastructure and equipment fleet rationalization measures taken in Canada beginning in late Q3 2019. Within our compression and process services segment, fourth quarter revenue for 2018 increased 58% compared to the same period in 2017. Such increase was due primarily to high sales activity in all markets, particularly in the United States. This segment exited fourth quarter of 2018 with a fabrication sales backlog of $222.9 million as compared to $167.9 million at December 31st, 2017 and $236.7 million at September 30th, 2018. Utilization of the compression rental fleet continued to increase during the fourth quarter with approximately 34,800 horsepower on rent at December 31st, 2018. This compares to 22,800 horsepower on rent at December 31st, 2017 and 31,500 horsepower on rent at September 30th, 2018. Segment EBITDA increased 52% to $12.6 million or 11% of revenue for the fourth quarter of 2018 compared to $8.3 million or 11% of revenue in Q4 2017. Negatively impacting EBITDA margins on a year-over-year basis were costs associated with a continued ramp-up of production at our Reardon, West Virginia plant and costs associated with the commissioning additional leased fabrication space in Canada where production activity commenced near the end of 2018. On an annual basis, operating income for the CPS segment increased from $20.7 million in 2017 to $40.5 million in 2018. Segment EBITDA for 2018 was $47.1 million, a 67% increase from the $28.2 million of EBITDA generated in 2017. This improvement was the result of increased business in all markets, particularly the United States. Fourth quarter revenue for our well servicing segment was $37.1 million and EBITDA was $9.2 million, a 25% of revenue, as compared to revenue of $37.2 million and EBITDA of $12.4 million, or 33% of revenue, during the fourth quarter of 2017. Negatively impacting EBITDA in well servicing segment in Q4 2018 relative to the comparable period in 2017 was lower activity in the United States as a result of labor shortages and cold weather conditions. Depreciation of the Australian dollar and a higher proportion of lower rate standby hours due to an extended holiday period in Australia. Activity levels in Australia returned to pre-holiday levels in early January. Total service hours for the fourth quarter were 42,382, of which 46 were in Canada, 46% in Australia, and 8% in the United States. This compares to 39,905 service hours during the fourth quarter of 2017, of which 44% were in Canada, 44% in Australia, and 12% in the United States. On an annual basis, operating income for well services segment increased from $13 million in 2017 to $19 million in 2018. Segment EBITDA for 2018 was $39.2 million, a 36% decrease from $28.7 million of EBITDA generated in 2017. This improvement was a result of addition of the well servicing segment with the acquisition of Savannah, improved discipline in declining unprofitable work, and ongoing cost management. Consolidated gross margin for the fourth quarter of 2018 was $43.9 million, or 20% of revenue, as compared to $42.4 million, or 24% of revenue in the fourth quarter of 2017. The marginal decrease in margin percentage was due to the higher relative contribution of the CPS segment to consolidated revenue. Consolidated cash flow before changes in non-cash working capital items was $23.1 million for the fourth quarter of 2018, as compared to $27.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2017. This decrease was due primarily to decreased activity levels in the contract drilling segment. Cash provided by operating activities for the fourth quarter of 2019 was $13.7 million, a 54% increase from $19.9 million of cash generated in Q4 2017. Consolidated EBITDA for the fourth quarter of 2018 was $29.2 million, a slight decrease from $29.7 million of EBITDA realized in Q4 2017. Total Energy generated fourth quarter net income attributable to shareholders of $8.6 million or 19 cents per share on a diluted basis, as compared to $6.2 million or 13 cents per share on a diluted basis in the fourth quarter of 2017. Total Energy financial conditions remain strong, with $125 million of positive working capital, including $31.2 million of cash and marketable securities at December 31, 2018. After paying $11 million of dividends and repurchasing $4.2 million of common shares, shareholders' equity increased by $14 million during 2018 as a result of our return to substantial profitability. Total debt was $285.8 million at December 31, 2018, a $41.9 million reduction from December 31, 2017. In addition to regular monthly principal payments on $15.6 million of mortgage debt, during 2018, Total Energy repaid $39.2 million of bank debt assumed for the acquisition of Savannah. At December 31, 2018, $227 million was drawn on $295 million of available revolving bank credit facilities. Our bank covenants consist of maximum senior debt to trailing 12 months bank-defined EBITDA of 3 times, and a minimum bank-defined EBITDA to interest expense of 3 times. At December 31st, the company's senior bank debt to bank EBITDA ratio was 1.95, and the bank interest coverage ratio was 6.79 times.
Thank you, Yulia. 2018 was a tumultuous year for the global energy industry. With the exception of Canada, at the beginning of the year, industry participants were generally optimistic that the recovery in oil and natural gas drilling and completion activity that began in 2017 would gain momentum through 2018. This was the case until oil prices declined significantly in the fourth quarter of 2018 and expectations were tempered. In Canada, political and legal impediments to investment in pipelines and other energy projects continued to weigh negatively on investor and industry sentiment throughout the year. In such environment, Total Energy continued to focus on growing its business outside of Canada, and we are pleased with our diversification efforts to date. In 2018, just over 50% of our revenue came from international markets, primarily the United States and Australia, compared to approximately 20% in 2016. The acquisition of Savannah Energy Services that was completed in mid-2017 was part of our strategy to geographically diversify Total Energy's revenue base. It also gave rise to the opportunity to realize approximately $17 million of cost savings during 2018 with the successful integration of Savannah. As a result, 2018 saw a return to profitability after losses in 2016 and 2017, the only years in which Total Energy did not achieve annual profitability since commencing operations in 1997. Government policies and regulations have consequences for investments and jobs. In the case of Total Energy, the poor investment climate in Canada not only directed our $30 million of 2018 growth capital outside of Canada, it also forced us to rationalize Canadian operations. Such rationalization included the relocation of equipment and personnel to the United States, the disposition of underutilized or decommissioned equipment, and the discontinuance of operations in geographic regions where the prospects for future activity are dim. The benefits of our rationalization efforts in the Canadian RTS segment began to be realized in the fourth quarter. Like our competitors, Total determines a strategy for its various businesses in regards to equipment pricing and utilization. While there is no perfect answer to the pricing versus utilization mix, generally we are underweight utilization if the required pricing is below what we determine is needed to be profitable and sustain the business beyond the near term. There are numerous factors beyond operating gross margin that we consider in determining what pricing is required for a particular situation, such as mobilization and demobilization costs and credit risk. Our competitors have different strategies based on different circumstances and corporate philosophies. Our strategy, not equipment functionality or obsolescence, is what drives our current relative Canadian drilling rig utilization. As evidence, we simply look to the utilization of the various Canadian drilling contractors and note that several of the Canadian industry leaders in drilling rig utilization have fleets that consist entirely or almost entirely of mechanical double drilling rigs. Our Canadian fleet consists not only of modern mechanical doubles with high capacity pumps, top drives, and walking systems, but also of ultra-heavy AC doubles and highly efficient TDF singles, which give us the capability to drill virtually any onshore well anywhere in Canada. I would also note that the steady exodus of drilling rigs from Canada to the United States consists entirely of deep capacity rigs, which reinforces our view that current pricing for heavier rigs in Canada is not sustainable. During 2018, we continued to focus on preserving Total's financial strength and liquidity. We refinanced $67.5 million of unsecured notes previously issued by Savannah at a significantly lower interest rate and repaid $41.9 million of debt. At year-end, we had $125 million of positive working capital, including $31.2 million of cash and marketable securities. Accordingly, over the course of 2018, our net debt decreased by 20% to $161.4 million. We also maintained our quarterly dividend, which has never been cut since we implemented a quarterly dividend of 3 cents per share in 2009. With oil prices having recovered much of their late 2018 losses thus far in 2019, international industry conditions have stabilized and oil field activity levels are relatively strong. Canada remains the exception, with first quarter drilling and completion activity levels approaching the lows experienced in 2016. As such, until the prospects for Canada improve, our focus for 2019 will remain similar to 2018, that being continued international growth, rationalization of Canadian operations, the relocation or disposal of underutilized equipment, and capital discipline. Our current capital budget for 2019 is $40.5 million, which includes $23.3 million of equipment maintenance and upgrades, and $17.2 million for targeted growth opportunities. Again, substantially all of our growth capital continues to be allocated to international opportunities, including the continued expansion of the CPS segment in the United States. Total Energy's flexible capital budget and strong liquidity position allow us to respond to any material changes in industry conditions, positive or negative, and to continue to pursue attractive investment opportunities despite very challenging equity markets for Canadian energy services companies. Such opportunities include the continued repurchase of our common shares under our normal course issuer bid. I would like to take this opportunity to invite all shareholders and other interested persons to our annual shareholders meeting that will commence at 10 a.m. on May 15th at the Calgary Petroleum Club. I would now like to open up the phone lines for any questions.
Certainly. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then 2. We will pause for a moment as callers join the queue. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our first question comes from Jane Belouk with CIBC World Markets. Please go ahead.
Morning, all.
Good morning, Jane.
So what are your expectations surrounding pricing trends for your contract drilling business over the first half of the year, looking at both Canada and the U.S.?
Canada is relatively stable. I would describe the pricing environment. U.S., we expect our pricing to improve as a bunch of legacy contracts have or are expiring.
Okay, I guess maybe not so much on pricing then, but maybe just thinking on like a softer activity outlook. Do you anticipate any further reductions in your marketed fleet in either country?
We're continually evaluating our equipment. We did have some disposals in 2018, both within our contract drilling, well servicing, and rental equipment fleets. We'll continue to look at opportunities to either monetize or relocate underutilized equipment. So we'll provide quarterly updates in that regard.
Okay. And then just on the improved profitability and utilization within your U.S. rental and transportation platform, was there anything specific that drove that, such as a large job win? And is there any reason we would see that level of ease in the first quarter?
I would say it was driven just by improved general activity levels in the areas that we compete in. And so there was no specific project or job that drove that. It was an across-the-board increase in general oil field activity. I would also comment that what we tend to find is the quality of our asset base in Canada is very high. And what we find is when we relocate that equipment to the U.S., we have a fairly easy time displacing competitor equipment just based on quality. And so I would describe the flow of equipment as accelerating, not decelerating, and a lot of it is displacement of third-party competitive equipment.
Okay, gotcha. That's very helpful. Thanks for that. And then looking at compression, was the margin decline in the quarter on the back of lower embedded margins within revenue?
I think we've got a lot of balls in the air in that division now. We're pretty pleased with the direction. The margins, plus or minus basis points on a quarter-over-quarter basis, are things that I'm not overly fixated on. You know, the ball's up in the air as we're continuing to ramp up materially our production in the United States, and there's a lot of costs of training and expanding your workforce. and you know, to achieve the efficiencies ultimately that we believe we can get and want to get there to continue to grow and improve the bottom line. You know, the other significant events in Q4 was the we took possession of a lease facility. We also vacated a smaller lease facility, and so there's costs associated with the vacation of the old facility and the outfitting and commencement of production in the new. And again, those expenses are all expense, not capitalized, and obviously, you know, those are, I would describe them as somewhat non-recurring costs.
Gotcha. So, okay, so fair to think of that as just kind of along the lines of some noise and ramping and then noise kind of quarter-to-quarter oscillations and not indicative of the future backlog margin.
There was nothing in the quarter that concerned me from an ongoing go-forward operational perspective.
Okay, gotcha. Appreciate the color there. And then just last one for me, and then I'll turn it back. Broadly speaking on capital allocation for next year, would you say your priorities are shifting to include a higher level of share buybacks, or is the priority similar to last year in that the lion's share of free cash flow will likely be directed towards the balance sheet?
You know, we like to buy assets that give us a good return. I, you know, don't set absolutes. Everything's relative. You know, we were clearly paid a lot of debt back. We continue to do that this year. We're generating a lot of free cash flow at pretty low equipment utilization levels, which gives us a lot of comfort about our ability to generate cash. You know, my comments on equipment utilization versus pricing, you know, we can change those variables if we wish and materially improve utilization. You know, there would obviously be some increase in cash flow. Our judgment is, you know, the negatives in the medium to long term outweigh the positives in the short term. But point being is our ability to generate significant free cash flow in a pretty challenging marketplace is self-evident. You know, in terms of share buybacks, we don't fight the market. We like to buy when other people are selling, and, you know, we'll provide regular updates through insider trading reports as to what our activity is there. Again, you know, we've been blacked out for 2 months now, so but stay tuned for what we do going forward.
Gotcha. That's good color. Well, thank you, guys. I'll turn the call back.
Once again, if you have a question, please press *1. Our next question comes from John Bereznicki with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, John.
Hey, just starting with CPS, obviously the SAP backlog took a modest step back in the quarter, I guess, for the first time in a long time. I'm guessing it's more just a function of workflow rather than, you know, a reflection of the underlying markets in front of you. Is that a fair comment?
So a couple comments, John. First of all, that's one day, one point in time. Things can change positively or negatively the day before and the day after. So I wouldn't, you know, one point in time does not a trend make. What I would say, obviously, the fact that we chose to increase our Canadian productive capacity by 30% tells you probably what our thoughts are on future activity. You know, if we thought it was going to contract materially, we wouldn't be taking possession in Q4 of a 30%, you know, adding 30% to our capacity. And in some cases, when you're running at full tilt, you also, you know, lose work because of delivery time. So I think I remind everyone it's one day out of 90 days in the quarter, and also there's a reason why we took on more fabrication space.
Fair enough, Dan. And that leads me to my next question is, with the Calgary expansion, when do you start to see a meaningful impact in the business, both top line and margin wise, going forward?
So we literally started production towards the end of the year in the last month. And so, you know, we're going to ramp that up. You know, these are, as you can appreciate, having visited our facilities, they're large facilities that, you know, take time to get properly staffed and everything working at the highest efficiency properly. But, you know, we measure that in months and quarters, not years. And so, you know, look to see that play out over the course of this year.
Got it. Good color. Shifting gears to RTS, obviously a stark contrast in profitability between Canada and the U.S. Could you maybe comment on what you're seeing in Canada, you know, among some of your private, smaller competitors in that type of environment?
Well, first of all, we're pretty pleased with Canada. If you look on a year-over-year basis in Q4, less revenue and a significant drop in operating loss. An operating loss is essentially pre-tax, pre-interest losses. So, you know, you can see we realized we had to address our infrastructure, which ultimately, you know, compromises the service network we have, but the reality is the current market doesn't support the infrastructure that was built to service a much higher level of activity. What we're seeing on the competitive side is similar activity. In most cases, in a lot of cases, not by voluntary design. You know, the exodus of people and equipment continues, and a lot of it is auction sale based, and a lot of it is relocation, and a lot of it is simply retirement and wind-ups. And so the ability of the Canadian service sector to support and respond to materially higher activity levels is being compromised with every quarter that goes by, and we'll only see that when we get a return to substantially higher activity levels. But, you know, the supply chain is being hit pretty hard, John.
Got it. And then just lastly on the drilling segment, obviously it looked like some kind of non-recurring margin challenges in the U.S. Just wondering if you could give us a little color and, you know, maybe a sense of when you see something more normalized out of that operation going forward.
Well, what happened is one of our triples, the derrick, was damaged during demob and moving, and that rig was out over 2 months. You know, those are our relatively high margin rigs in the U.S. And so, you know, we lost over 2 months of revenue plus, you know, expenses in the range of $800,000 to repair that. You know, we chose not to make an insurance claim. You know, it comes down to, you know, your cost benefit on those types of things, and, you know, you end up paying more insurance premiums for the next 5 years relative to the cost. So, you know, those are, I guess, part of the issues that you arise during a rig moving operation. So, you know, with that triple back working, you know, hopefully we don't have any more damage there.
Fair enough. As always, appreciate the color. I'll turn it back over. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Ian Gillies with GMP. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone.
Morning, Ian.
Are you seeing enough demand ex-North America to perhaps add another compression facility in an international market at this point in time, or can you service most of that from Canada?
Our focus on productive capacity additions would be, I would say, North America. Largely, your input supplies and labor force, you know, that are required to build compression is pretty North American centric. And so I think between, the, you know, U.S. and Canada, we have a pretty good footprint, to satisfy compression demand anywhere in the world. I think it'd be a question of, you know, increasing that capacity as we did in Q4, with our Canadian, capacity, as opposed to looking to locate fabrication outside of North America. You know, you never say never, but I think our focus would be on North American expansion on the production side. All of your major components are sourced out of the U.S., And then labor is a huge issue in that business. It's high skilled, pretty specific knowledge that frankly doesn't exist in a lot of countries where we sell compression and process equipment into.
Okay. If I work under the assumption, which may be incorrect, that most of the U.S. rentals equipment is focused in the northern part of the U.S., are you seeing any opportunities to leverage some of your activity on the drilling rig side in the Permian to perhaps start offering some rentals equipment there as well, or just curious?
The answer to that is yes.
And so, I mean, with that in mind, how do you then, I guess, what's the strategy go about supplying that equipment or is it already in that basin?
Our footprint in the U.S. Continues to grow steadily, and stay tuned. We don't open branches until we know there's a sustainable minimum level of work in the area, but we have operations extending down into Texas currently.
Okay. And then on the Canadian drilling side, I mean, you didn't retire any rigs at year-end despite continued weak utilization. I mean, has there been much consideration to retiring some rigs at this point in time, just given the go-forward outlook?
You know, we've got a list of rigs that literally every rig that we have in our marketed fleet can go to work tomorrow. It's not a question of obsolescence or capacity, is a question of price, and we don't retire rigs that are capable of working. And you know, that said, there's opportunities from time to time to relocate or dispose of underutilized equipment. We will consider those opportunities. You know, we did sell some in the U.S. Last year. You know, there's a time to buy, there's a time to sell, but we do have two joint venture rigs in Canada that will be sold later this year, but you'll see that rig count come off. That's part of a strategy, though, to continue to, I would say, rationalize our cost structure, particularly with some of the legacy Aboriginal partnerships that Savannah had that simply, you know, given industry activity levels, have become fairly dormant, and, you know, there's a lot of cost to keeping those partnerships going, you know, without a lot of revenue coming to either of the partners. So some of that's cleanup of some specific situations as opposed to, you know, the underlying rigs not being, you know, capable to drill. But, you know, we'll provide updates quarterly, as we always do, as to what our market fleet is.
And in Australia, are you able to talk about what, I guess, broader bid activity may look like in terms of adding capacity there? Because obviously, I mean, outside of seasonality in Q4, that business performed quite well in 2018.
Yeah, I think Australia is a pretty balanced market. It's a healthy market. You know, with the oil plunge in Q4, definitely, I don't know, but I suspect, you know, that was probably part of the reason why you saw extended holiday downtime. Basically, half of December was holidays. A lot of it, too, is there's rules there on permitting for rig transportation, that, and depending where your rigs are located, you know, you get a holiday situation that basically, you know, shuts your rig moves down for 2.5 weeks. You know, so some of it's kind of idiosyncratic to that marketplace. But Australia is a balanced market. My sense is it's neither too hot nor too cold. I think it's a very balanced, healthy market. And, you know, we continue to be a major player in that market, both through our drilling and well servicing as well as our compression presence. And so we'd be one of the larger service providers to that market. It's a core market to us, and we'll continue to grow with the market as it grows. But we're not going to force anything.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll turn the call back over.
Thanks.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Oren McCluskey from Lincoln Share Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Oren. I hope it's cold in New York.
The colder, the better.
Yes, you bet.
Yeah, I pray for it. what can you say about well servicing revenues and profitability currently and going forward? And is there anything special you can do to improve it, or is this just a follow along with CDS?
So the well servicing in Canada was profitable for 2018, Oren, and I understand this is the first time for Savannah that business has been profitable in many, many years. Certainly it's the first time it's been profitable under our watch, but I'm told by people who've been here for quite a few years, it's the first time that that segment in Canada has been profitable. I'm talking pre-tax profit. So we're very happy with the progress we've made there. It's a combination of being disciplined on the work you take as well as managing your costs and obviously the price you pay for the asset. I'm very comfortable that we will continue to run a prudent business there in Canada, and you know, I'm pleased with the performance to date and with any recovery in the Canadian activity levels. You know, that business stands to benefit materially. In the meantime, though, you know, being profitable in this current environment is obviously we're pretty pleased. In the United States, we need to grow the business. You know, last year our focus, Oren, was integrating Savannah, and you obviously start with the big areas. U.S. well servicing is a very well-run but very small business, and what we saw in Q4, you know, exemplified the reason why we need to grow it is when you have some cold weather and you lose a few crews, you know, going from, you know, 8 or 9 rigs down to 6 or 7 makes a material impact because you've got some basic overhead. So, you know, our focus going forward on U.S. well servicing is to grow the business. And we've got a very good core business there that operates very well, has minimal management time because it is well operated, but we need to grow it. And so that will be one of our go-forward focuses now that, you know, some of our other bigger areas of focus have been addressed. In Australia, again, we're one of the larger providers. It's a pretty balanced market, and we're pleased with how they operate there. And, you know, I expect, you know, again, the market's pretty stable, so barring any material changes in that, it'll be business as usual, and, you know, we'll continue to grow with the market, but we're not going to force growth either.
Would you say your comment on RTS that your equipment is superior to what you're finding in the U.S. And you're picking up business from competition. Is that theme also true in well servicing, or do you expect it to be true?
Yes. You know, pretty comfortable with the asset base that we acquired with Savannah on the well servicing side in all segments. You know, we've looked at a number of acquisitions in the well servicing side on both sides of the border, and most of them have been turned down on the quality of the asset base. We kind of look at it and go, why would we buy that when we've got, you know, 30 rigs sitting that are in way better condition? You know, so I would rather, I'm not going to buy market share, but I'm also, you know, our goal since we acquired Savannah was, first of all, to understand that business. We never had service rigs. You know, the management team, both in Canada and the U.S. and Australia, are all solid. And, you know, basically by giving it a little more focus and kind of realigning interest a bit, you know, we've seen a pretty dramatic improvement in the financial performance. And success breeds success. And, you know, we're going to play off that. So I believe consolidation would help all business lines, but we're also not going to pay to take on someone else's problem unless the risk reward looks good to us, Oren. So, you know, we will look to relocate assets down to the U.S. as well, if it makes sense, and we have competent people to run the assets. So one of the big challenges in the U.S. right now is labor, because it is busy, and so we see that in all business segments. We have relocated Canadians down there to help support growth, and we also are, aggressively looking to add, we prefer local in all our markets, and so we're aggressively looking for competent people to help us grow our business, including the service rig side in the U.S.
Good, thank you. I thought results looked pretty good considering everything.
Yeah, Canada's a grind, but, the comfort we take place is we can generate a lot of free cash flow running our asset base at 15%.
Okay, thank you.
We can get that to 30% tomorrow by cutting the price a bit.
Our next question comes from Tim Monticello with AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Just a few questions for you here. In the CPS segment, you spoke about international demand. I'm wondering if you can give any color on which end markets you're seeing that demand in.
We're pretty tight hole for competitive reasons, but, international we define as everything but Canada, although U.S. is increasingly becoming, a very large market for us, with the U.S. Production now it's certainly becoming a core market to us.
Okay, can you speak to outside of North America perhaps? What percentage that would be?
Southeast Asia is a strong market for us. We'll go pretty much anywhere, but the markets that would be material. Consistent markets for us would be Canada, U.S., and Australia. And then, obviously, there's projects here and there.
Okay. That's helpful. In terms of moving equipment from Canada to U.S., it seems like there's been a pretty consistent flow, especially in the rental segment. Do you have any targets for 2019 or things, or a level of equipment transfers that you think you can due in 2019?
First of all, we expense all the costs related to those equipment relocations. And so when you look at our financial performance for whatever division, whether it's rigs or rentals, all of the costs of relocating equipment's expense, net of obviously of any recoveries we get from the customer. We don't set targets. We don't move equipment on spec either. So equipment that's relocated is relocated specifically to go straight to work. What we've seen is an acceleration, not a deceleration of that trend, though.
Okay. That's helpful as well. And
these are big loads. So, to move, 100, 150 pieces of equipment, that's a lot of truckloads.
Yeah, understood.
You're not throwing 5-10 pieces on a truckload, let me put it that way.
No, that's fair. Okay.
Appreciate these are lots of loads going.
In terms of the legal expenses that you see in the quarter, what do you expect the pace of those expenses to be over the next few quarters?
So first of all, our confidence in all those cases is going up, not down. We take them serious, which is why we have it, spent some money on it. The flip side is, the expenses tend to go up and down depending on file activity, and so, Q4 was a little busier with some file activity. We generally don't like to make excuses or comment, but, when you have a material SG&A item that's targeted to a specific thing that's non-operational, we'll generally highlight that. But again, we've taken zero provision for those claims because we don't see them as having, we believe we'll win. And, we're going to spend the resources necessary to bring those to successful conclusion.
Okay. So, fair to say it'll be variable over the next few quarters?
Yeah, it depends on the file. So, like you said, it depends on how much time the lawyers spend that quarter, and that depends on what, you know, what part of the process they're in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Process, so, I don't know. Okay.
Yep, thanks a lot.
No problem.
This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Daniel Halleck for any closing remarks.
Well, thank you for your participation this morning, and I hope everyone has a nice weekend, and we will speak to you after our first quarter. Thanks, and have a good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.